The full Will Chase experience. I love it.
The following is a production by Cutting to the Chase Podcast. Jeff Meller, ESPN 1000. What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, Will. What's going on, man? Been a while. How you doing?
Yeah, it's been a little while. Doing good. I have been getting excited for the upcoming Super Bowl 60. It's kind of an awesome weekend with the Olympics getting started here this weekend as well. The opening ceremonies and everything. I've been watching a lot of hockey as well. So how about you? How's things on your end?
Yeah, no. Winter Olympics definitely is big in my household. My son, who's 15, is a big-time downhill skier. So he races pretty competitively. So family's definitely very interested in watching, you know, a lot of the racing, the ski racing in the Olympics. So, you know, especially obviously with the Lindsey Vonn story, you know, just with her at least attempting to race on a torn ACL, that should be a pretty interesting storyline no matter what happens. So, yeah, definitely it's a cool combination, which should make for, you know, February to fly by, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, obviously, like you said, the ACL with Lindsey Vonn is crazy, and I'm curious to see how she's going to do with that as well. And but yeah, looking forward to, of course, Super Bowl 60 coming up on Sunday. I think every year it's always an interesting matchup, no matter who the teams are. But definitely this year, kind of a little bit off the wall, at least as far as New England coming into the year. No one kind of, I don't think, would have seen that coming off of a pretty tough year last year, obviously, and then Seattle, second year coach Mike McDonald. So it's McDonald, it's Vrabel for New England. It's a new cast of characters from the last time New England was here in the Super Bowl, and of course Seattle even longer, a decade or so ago. So what's one thing about maybe this Super Bowl that maybe you can't stop thinking about, or something that kind of grabs you?
For me, the biggest storyline, Will, is that the Sam Darnold reclamation project, that stands above all else for me, because it really does encapsulate, I think, when you look at it, how important the landing spot is for any young quarterback, right? And the truth is that if you talk about football with anybody, or you just are a big fan of it, you can't get away from the constant conversation of quarterbacks. It bothers me a little bit because, you know, as somebody who's watched football as closely as I have for as long as I have, you really understand that there's way too much emphasis put on quarterbacks winning the big game, and it's always put on their shoulders. But that's the reality of the position. It has become, you know, I'd say especially over the last 20, 25 years, it has exploded into far more importance put on the quarterback's shoulders, whether we like it or not. It's just the media landscape that we live in. And so I'm rooting for Sam Darnold simply because, you know, he got a raw deal. The truth is that the Jets were a terrible situation for him. They did him no favors. And for him to kind of rebuild his career, to go to San Francisco as the backup, work under Kyle Shanahan, then go to Minnesota last season and have the fantastic year that he had, only to be cast aside, which, you know, that's something that I think is definitely worth exploring, you know, how he got to Seattle and the choice that the Vikings made. But now to be here in this position where they're the favorites on Sunday, I'm rooting for him to follow it up, because the unfortunate reality of the situation is, as the favorites, if the Seahawks don't go on to win this game, if you're Sam Darnold, you're just going to have to deal with all these conversations again of, can he win the big one? Which, again, I don't think is fair. So part of me is just like, I don't like to see that put around quarterbacks who I think do so much and try so hard, everything they do. So I'm hoping that he can finish it off and win the Super Bowl and never have to talk about being, you know, a bust again.
With Seattle being favored, what's something they should have to worry about, you know, even as a favorite?
I think the biggest thing when you come into a Super Bowl with, you know, really, both teams don't really have any experience, you know, and outside of Milton Williams, really, if you talk about guys who have actually played in the game in a meaningful way. So everybody, it's going to be a new experience for them. From the Patriots standpoint, I look at it and I say, well, Mike Vrabel has played as a player in numerous Super Bowls, so he's certainly familiar with the process, and he can probably prepare his team for what the experience is going to be like. And that's something that I don't think anybody can really be prepared for until they go through it. But having a head coach who has been through it, not just once, but numerous times in his playing career, I think that's a huge advantage for the Patriots, as you know, to begin the game. The truth is, I always believe that teams generally settle in by the second quarter. The key is, can you get through that first quarter unscathed enough so that you're still playing in a game and you haven't already shot yourself in the foot with a key turnover or spotted your opponent 7 points, right? So I think that's always kind of the biggest factor for teams when they go into a game is, hey, Super Bowl, we know it's going to be unlike anything we've ever experienced. So let's not let nerves factor into this too much. Let's keep ourselves in the football game early and then settle into it by the second quarter.
Yeah, it does seem like, I think I've mentioned this before to you, it seems like every year, or at least lately, the last several years, the Super Bowl always gets off to kind of a slow start. It's kind of like you said, second quarter, second half is when it starts to kind of get going there. As far as Mike Vrabel, of course, first year coach in New England, but he's been around, you know, of course, coaching with the Titans and been in the NFL, of course, for a long time. You know, him having been in the Super Bowl as a player some years ago now probably is definitely an advantage that he could kind of, you know, give his team or you know, kind of help knowing like how the situation is going to play out and everything. I guess like with Seattle's side, and especially like the coaching staff or, you know, head coach not having been there before, is there kind of like, yeah, they're favored, but it's also kind of like, I don't know. I think New England has more of that house money, probably have that house money attitude maybe, or at least you could say that they do because no one thought they'd be here. But maybe it's kind of like for both teams, it's kind of like this feeling of, we don't know anything else. You know, we're just going to play our game. This is how we got here. Not that experience is there. I mean, experience is always a good thing, but maybe it's kind of one of those things where it's like either team, they kind of have maybe it's like a loose attitude, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah. You know, the truth, it's interesting because I think from the outside looking in, it's easy for us to say, yeah, like yeah. Nobody expects the Patriots to be here. To your point, you know, I believe they were 60-1 coming into the season to make the Super Bowl. And the crazy thing is the Seahawks weren't that far off. They were both long shots to make the Super Bowl. Now, Seattle, I think if you put them under the microscope, those odds seemed a little bit more favorable to the bettors because they had won 10 games the previous season. So clearly they were making inroads, but there was a lot more uncertainty. Again, back to the Sam Darnold piece, right? Like, what could he actually do? Nobody really expected him to come in and lead them to a Super Bowl. But even though the Patriots, you know, we look at them and say, oh, they're ahead of schedule, you also get back to, hey, and I have no doubt that this is something that Mike Vrabel is going to be preaching, because even though he was extremely successful as a player, he also, as a head coach of the Tennessee Titans, numerous times found himself in the playoffs in position where they thought they could actually make a deep run, and games would, you know, playoff games would slip through their fingers, and all of a sudden, before you know it, you turn and, you know, Mike Vrabel's being fired in Tennessee. So I have no doubts that, because I do think on a week-to-week basis, I think Mike Vrabel has always been and continues to be one of the best head coaches to keep his team prepared each and every week. So I think he'll have the Patriots ready and focused as much as they can be. The question is, can they stand up to, I think, a more talented Seattle team? Because I guarantee you, Vrabel's not looking at this as house money, right? Like,
right.
It's one of those things where in football, I think we always think, okay, this is something to build on. We look at Drake May being in his second year, and you're like, okay, this is going to be the start of a long, successful run for him. But again, I'll look through the annals of history for pro football, and Dan Marino in his second season got to the Super Bowl. They lost to the 49ers, a lot of people, and he had an epic season. In fact, you know, one of his, I think it might have been when all is said and done, his greatest season ever as a player. And we're talking about one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the league, who sometimes gets lost a little bit nowadays because he didn't win any Super Bowls. But that's to bring us full circle here. He played in the Super Bowl in his second season. Everybody expected him to be somebody who would win multiple Super Bowls and at least play in multiple Super Bowls, never got back. So I think Mike Vrabel understands that even though they are building something good for the long term, you can't let these opportunities slip through your fingers believing that there's going to be more to come. And so I think he'll have them prepared. The question is, can they match up with Seattle? Because I do think Seattle's defense is elite. And so that's where I'm really interested to see how the chess match plays out.
Not that it's fair to a team or player, I guess, if like they lose a Super Bowl and they have kind of that blemish on their resume, so to speak. But it's kind of like you said with Marino, I was thinking about that earlier. It's like, I think he even said, you know, he thought he'd get back there. And of course, it never happened. So it's definitely one of those things where I kind of feel like if you lose a Super Bowl, it's like I said, it's not really fair to say that it's a blemish necessarily. But it's also kind of like, man, like Eli Manning looks pretty good going 2-0 in the Super Bowl, even though his brother also won a couple but lost a couple. So I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, it's not like a series, like a Stanley Cup final or a World Series where you lose, you know, 7-game series, and you might come out on the wrong end of it. It's like you said, one game. So I don't think it's necessarily house money on the way they're thinking about it, but I guess it's kind of more of like that maybe they can be kind of loose, like we're too dumb to realize we shouldn't be here, so to speak. As far as Darnold, is he fixed, or is it kind of just he's in a clean situation? We saw him in Minnesota thrive last year, and obviously it's a good situation now in Seattle. Or is this the guy that we thought the Jets, you know, the Jets thought that they had, and the Jets are just a mess, basically.
So
they are a mess, but
yeah, like, you know, it's interesting because like you say, you know, is he fixed? I don't know if he was ever broken.
Yeah.
I think the problem is, again, we put too much on the individual players when they're in bad situations. And this is one thing I've come around to believing for a long time, right? Like, I mean, look at Matthew Stafford in Detroit, right? Put up a lot of great numbers. The team couldn't really win consistently. And then finally he gets to LA in an opportunity to show off what he's capable of. And now he went on to win a Super Bowl. He's probably going to win the MVP, which tonight, as we're recording this, well, he's, you know, they're going to have the NFL honors tonight. So my suspicion is that Matthew Stafford will win his first career MVP. And, you know, he's a guy who was like, hey, he was very talented, but like, again, saddled with the, oh, can he win the big one? Is he a guy you can truly count on? I think what we're seeing now more often than not is there's a lot of talented quarterbacks in this league, but they need to be put, if they're put in good positions, advantageous positions, good offensive schemes with good play callers who understand modern offense, which, you know, from a bigger picture, like think about Sam Darnold, right? He went to San Francisco to be the backup to Brock Purdy in Kyle Shanahan's system. From there, he goes to Minnesota in Kevin O'Connell's system, which again is similar, same system for the most part, gets an opportunity to start there and plays phenomenally well last year until the last two games of the season, which completely, you know, go about as poorly as you could have anticipated they could possibly go. And so that put the Vikings in that weird position where it was like, well, we just drafted JJ McCarthy with a, you know, a first round pick. We're invested in him. Do you really want to, you know, franchise tag Sam Darnold and then blocks JJ McCarthy? And they were in a weird position. I think in retrospect, everybody would say, yes, absolutely. You should probably go with the guy who won you 14 games and figure it out from there. We'll see if that lesson is learned in the future by other NFL teams, or, you know, it's one of those rare situations where it never happened in the, you know, in the history of the NFL prior to this. So I don't know if it'll happen again, but I just think Sam Darnold finally had an opportunity to play in a system that complemented his skills, didn't ask him to do everything. The truth is that all these great offensive schemes that we talk about, everybody talks about Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay and their tree, but this is now going on. We're talking about almost essentially 50 years. You know, Bill Walsh was the, you know, modern innovator of what we currently watch in the National Football League. The original architect of the West Coast offense that he created in, you know, originally in Cincinnati, believe it or not, when he was the offensive coordinator under Paul Brown. So that was, you know, that was in the late 60s, early 70s that Bill Walsh did that, then went out and got his opportunity as a head coach in San Francisco in the late 70s, early 80s. And then now we see all these years later, after Mike Shanahan, Kyle's father, was offensive coordinator under Bill Walsh in the mid-80s. And then, of course, Gary Kubiak, who was the backup quarterback to John Elway in Denver. And also, obviously, he got to know Mike Shanahan's offense very well. And so you have, you know, the history of Mike Shanahan and Gary Kubiak carrying Bill Walsh's scheme forward. And then their two, you know, their sons, Kyle Shanahan and Clint Kubiak, and actually multiple Kubiaks out there now. So there's, you just seeing it carried forward. Sean McVay obviously learned under Mike Shanahan in Washington as well. And so Kevin O'Connell, he's part of that tree. So I think what you're seeing is that the quarterbacks who can be, you know, renovated or the reclamation products that can be brought back, we're seeing them done so in the West Coast offense under guys who really know how to run it. And so, you know, long answer to try and sum it up here is just, I think if you get into the right West Coast offense under a guy who knows how to utilize a quarterback's talents, you're probably going to see good results. Sam Darnold was he the fifth overall pick in his draft, right? I know he's the top.
Something like that.
He always had the physical talent to do so. That's why he was drafted that high. And so I'm not surprised now that he's had an opportunity to grow as a player. And at 28 years old, he's finally tapped into it. So, I don't think he's broke. I think he's just finally gotten an opportunity to excel in a great offense. And that is what we're seeing now in Seattle.
Yeah, third pick, and the Jets are still just a disaster, longest playoff drought in the league going right now. Who knows if they'll ever figure it out.
Well, and it doesn't, you know, they're in a bad spot too because they still have Aaron Glenn. It went about as poorly as it could go under him this season, but to the point where it went so bad, but you can understand why sometimes a franchise does not want to just, you know, fire a coach after one season. You think, okay, we need a little bit of continuity, but I don't know. Let me say this. I would be surprised if we're doing this again next year, Will, if after a second season, I'll be surprised if Aaron Glenn is coming back for a third. I just think it's already gone in the wrong direction for the Jets yet again.
And he actually wanted Justin Fields too, which is, you know him very well, so.
Yeah, we've seen that firsthand. That's an interesting question, right? Yeah. If Justin Fields actually got into one of these offenses run, like, what could he do? Because for a long time said that I thought if Justin Fields had landed in Philadelphia, I think he's capable of doing what Jalen Hurts did. Last season, I that was one of those positions where a lot of people were calling me a little bit crazy. And after watching Jalen Hurts again go through what he went through this season, now it doesn't seem as ridiculous that Justin Fields might be able to do something like what Jalen Hurts was capable of. If you put somebody if you get a quarterback surrounded by just like all pro level players at a lot of different positions, a lot of guys can kind of manage the game and lead you to victories.
So with Vrabel and McDonald, of course, leading their teams to the Super Bowl so quickly, kind of in their respective situations, do you think that, not to say that future GMs in the next hiring cycle is going to shy away from like the next, you know, offensive guru or trying to get like an offensive mind in there, but do you think they might look at guys that instead maybe possess more of that culture building mentality or that attribute, kind of the CEO type, I guess, and not just because, you know, not just be like, oh, we want like an offensive, the next up and coming offensive mind. We want maybe a guy, if they already have a quarterback, for instance, kind of like a New England situation. I know Vrabel in New England, it seemed like an obvious pick last offseason when that was happening. But do you feel like maybe this is going to kind of change a little bit of the mentality that goes into hiring in the next cycle or the next few cycles?
I'm sure it may keep some franchises a little more open to that.
Yeah.
However, you know, I do think that when you look at, just think about all the head coaches that get all the conversation around them. It is guys like Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay and, you know, Ben Johnson and Lean Cohen in Jacksonville. So you've got like, it always, I think there's just something where when the young head coaches who are offensive quote unquote geniuses are out there, they're going to probably be highly sought after. But what we're seeing more and more often now is that I think teams are open to, you know, cutting ties with their head coach if they don't think it's working, more so than they have in the past. Again, this cycle there were 10, you know, head coach firings and hirings. So like, that's an all-time, you know, high for the NFL, right? And it feels like, you know, we can basically count on 6 to 8 every year now at a minimum. So what we're going to see is that you're kind of just going to run out of candidates, right? There's not 6 to 10 offensive geniuses waiting in the wings every coaching cycle. So I do anticipate that the success of Vrabel and McDonald, and I think, you know what? I think if you look at Jesse Minter in Baltimore, that can be a, you can probably draw a straight line from Mike McDonald's success in Seattle to why Steve Bisciotti wanted to hire or was willing to hire Jesse Minter in Baltimore, because he saw McDonald in Baltimore as his defensive coordinator leave and go on and have great success. And so when he finally decided to fire John Harbaugh, he said, you know what? Okay, well, let's go get Jesse Minter, a young, a bright defensive mind who can maybe be Mike McDonald 2.0 in Baltimore. So I do think teams will be open to it. I just think more than anything else, you want to be hiring a head coach who can articulate his message and have a clear vision of what he wants to accomplish, because you can get it done with a defensive guy, that there's no doubt about it. Again, though, like, you know, I think Vrabel having the idea that Josh McDaniels, great offensive coordinator, right? And also somebody who's not likely to leave anytime soon because he's had the head coaching opportunities not go well. But you'd be hard pressed to see a scenario where Josh McDaniels would be somebody that teams would want to, you know, pick away from New England. So he's probably going to be there for the long term, which is good for Mike Vrabel. And then, but interestingly enough, right, Mike McDonald is going to lose Clint Kubiak to the Raiders as soon as they're done with the Super Bowl. So we'll see how they're able to pivot, right? Who's going to be their new offensive coordinator? And will he be able to have the same type of success that Kubiak had with Sam Darnold this past year? That's going to be an interesting thing to see how it works out next year. And then, I guess, to be determined, will we still be raving about Mike McDonald in a year from now once if he doesn't have an offense that is as nearly productive? I love what his defense looks like. They're the best in the league, in my opinion. So I'm cool with that. But I've always said, I think the best way to build future success in the NFL is to have that pairing of a good offensive play caller as your head coach and a great young quarterback. Because unfortunately, I do think quarterback, in terms of like long term in the NFL, because of injury and just the attrition on the body of a very physical game, it's really hard to, you know, look at your defensive players on your roster and count on them for anything longer than 3 to 4 years. Now, you might be lucky. You might have a couple of guys on your defensive side of the ball who will be all-time greats, who could be on your team for a decade. But the reality is that those guys are few and far between. And so I think it's hard to consistently build a great defense that's going to win you a championship. But because of the way the rules protect quarterbacks, you can consistently say, if we build a great offense, we should be in the playoffs year after year. And then if we can get, you know, a good enough defense to complement that, well, then we should have some success. So for the long haul, that's my preferred way of building a football team. You know, unlike back in the 80s and 90s, when you could truly build an elite defense that could help you win a Super Bowl almost single-handedly.
Do you think there's a better, at least in New England's case, being an underdog, having a guy like Vrabel kind of play up that underdog mentality, or I'm sure they're playing that up as much as they can. Do you think there's a better coach kind of built for that kind of mentality? What are the few? I feel like there's a few that you could name for sure, but I feel like Vrabel's one of those guys, though.
Maybe you can convince me there might be one or two guys who would be on par with Vrabel, and it's not even just his mentality of getting his guys, you know, ramped up and ready, because that's something that I always feel like is that's just visually, we look at him, he's a hardcore defensive, we look at him and everybody who, you know, is older than like 25 years old remembers him as a linebacker catching touchdowns, you know, as a third tight end on the goal line for the Patriots. So you have that mix and you're like, that guy just like, he's a football coach who will, you know, get you riled up and ready to play a football game. But I think what I've always been most impressed with by him is that I think he is somebody who you know, I just always go back to that playoff game, the Titans, when they beat the Patriots, and they basically ended the Tom Brady era in New England by upsetting them in New England. And, you know, Vrabel, and he was coaching circles around Bill Belichick. Like, he knows the rules back and forth, unlike, I'd say, I don't know if he has any peers in the league. He understands the intricacies of the rule book to the point where, you know, if he's going to, you know, continue, there's little spots where he can take multiple delay of games to run down the clock. I think they actually had to go back and kind of like change the rules because of that. So, like, he knows what he's doing. He's always got his team prepared. I feel like when challenges come into play, he's always going to make a smart and informed decision in terms of timeouts, which is, you know, it seems like something that's simple, but it seems like something that is always messed up by coaches week in and week out. I always feel like he's going to make the right decisions to give his team that extra possession if they need one. So, like, on the margins, I think Vrabel is probably the best in the league. And then he just seems like a guy who's going to fire you up that you'd love to play for. So, yeah, I think he's a huge advantage having him on your as your head coach.
Yeah.
You know, and but Mike McDonald in the, you know, he might not look like the rah-rah guy, and he's not a former player, so we can't just like put that on him. But he also seems like a guy who is very buttoned up and has a lot of the intricacies of football covered. So I think both teams are in good position. I don't feel like either coach is really a liability in this Super Bowl.
Are you looking at like a 24-20 or even under 20 type of a score?
You know, I think I could see a scenario where Seattle wins this one rather soundly. And so I could see, I could see like a 31-17 kind of score. And, you know, and I always throw in like, I personally, when it comes to betting spreads, if I'm not in on the underdog, I hate betting them because I just hate not having a team that's winning a football game aligned with what I'm trying to accomplish, right? So let's say the Seahawks are up 31-20 late, right? And they're just trying to run out the clock. And then all of a sudden the Patriots come back and score a late touchdown to make it 31-27, get the backdoor cover there. I hate betting the favorites and laying points just because you can see scenarios where they're not playing, you know, the same game that you need them to play. So for me personally, if I'm not betting the underdog and because I don't think they can, or, you know, I don't think they're going to win outright, I always am a little bit leery about laying points. But having said that, I do think the Seahawks ultimately will win this game convincingly. Whether or not the backdoor cover comes into play late, though, that's the one thing I always have a hard time saying with any type of real certainty.
I saw this tweet earlier from NFL researcher. Fewest points per game allowed this season, including playoffs. Seattle 17.1, number one. Seattle 17.1. New England, number two, 17.3. So, and New England's gone through, obviously, some very tough defenses already to get to this point. Do you think it's, I mean, I guess looking at the path that New England's taken to get here, going through Houston and the Chargers and, of course, Denver, is it more that defense that Drake May faced? Or do you think Drake May is in for, I mean, you just said you think Seattle wins anyway, but, like, is Drake May... He hasn't seen anything like the Seattle defense, though, right?
Well, I mean, you bring up a good point, though. The Chargers, the Texans, and the Broncos, you know, and specifically the Texans, and even the Broncos, those two, I think, are the second and third best defenses in the NFL after Seattle. So they've had the opportunity at least to prep themselves a little bit. Now they won, not convincingly in any way. They struggled offensively. In fact, if either Houston or Denver had been able to muster any sort of offense, I think both would probably be in the Super Bowl instead of the Patriots. And the unfortunate—I don't want to say—I think the Patriots' defense is good, but I don't think they're on par with those other defenses that we just talked about. I do think, you know, C.J. Stroud. I don't know what happened. I don't know where he got short-circuited over the last year or so, but clearly he's not the same player that he was in his rookie season. And obviously Jared Stidham, you know, he's a backup quarterback in the league for a reason. And he kind of gave the game to the Patriots with that ridiculous, you know, fumble that ended up putting the Patriots in position, you know, from the 11-yard line, you know, to go ahead and score their only touchdown of the game. But this gets back to Will talking about Mike Vrabel, right?
Yeah.
He recognized the game. He recognized the conditions, and he recognized that with his team on top, he didn't need to get cute, right? But just being tied up 7-7. It was a matter of, but until they got that go-ahead field goal, it was simply, hey, let's not make a mistake and give the Broncos an easy short field. Whereas Jared Stidham, I don't know if I'm going to put the blame on Sean Payton for the fumble, because Stidham just, that was a terrible decision. But Sean Payton did go for it on fourth down and forwent a field goal opportunity, which could have put the Broncos up 10-0 had he just taken that field goal in that position. So I think Mike Vrabel, if the opportunity presents itself, he'll put the Patriots in a good opportunity to win. Whether or not, though, that, you know, for Drake May, is his shoulder healthy? That's something that we're not going to know until we actually start to see him throwing footballs in the first quarter, because he's going to, I know he's saying, oh, he feels fine, he feels great. He might be telling the truth. He might be outright lying. Yeah. No, we don't know, and we won't know until we actually see him throwing footballs. So I think it's hard to kind of know exactly whether or not the Patriots will be able to do enough offensively. But I do think going against Seattle's defense is going to be tough. Assuming, I will throw the caveat, Nick Emenwori, the rookie safety who's been absolutely awesome and critical to everything that Seattle does. He's got the ankle injury that he's dealing with. I expect him to play. It's just, will he be as effective as he's been all season long?
The Bears, obviously, playoff run this year probably exceeded probably your expectations, I'm assuming, a lot of people's expectations. But do you trust a team built on, like, they led the league in takeaways, the fourth quarter comebacks, Caleb was a king in the fourth quarter. Does that scare you going into next season, or does that scream regression, or are you looking at it more like glass half full, like, hey, let's see what this team does now, full year under Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams, big year?
Yeah, so I was, you know, Ben Johnson was everything I hoped he could have been, exactly what I was, you know, I thought he was going to be great, and he, in my opinion, proved to be great as a head coach in his first year. So, and truth be told, I do think there were moments where Ben Johnson, for all the good that he did do, there were some mistakes that he made throughout the season. But nevertheless, I hope, he seems like he's somebody who's smart enough to learn from his own mistakes as well. So I trust that he'll be even a little bit better when it comes to game management and just maybe some of his fourth down decisions. It's one thing to be aggressive. There's other points where I feel like he was a little, you know, overly aggressive unnecessarily at times. But nevertheless, it was an extremely successful season. It did exceed my expectations. I do think they were a little bit fortunate. The turnover luck absolutely went their way. I think you'd be foolish to believe that they can replicate that. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't still be a top third team when it comes to takeaways, because I do believe that's something that has to be emphasized in practice. And, you know, if you have that type of mentality, you're more likely to come through when the opportunities present themselves. You know, Lovie Smith's tenure as the Bears head coach, I think, is proof that that can happen. But, you know, leading the league, that's a different story. That sometimes you need to be fortunate. I'm not sure that the Bears will necessarily be able to replicate that. But when the defense wasn't taking the ball away, they weren't stopping anyone for the most part, usually. And so I do think they can get better defensively as a whole in terms of stopping the opponents, which will make them a better team. Again, they may not create the takeaways that they did, which, there to your point about regression, would certainly be something why they might not replicate the same record that they had. However, I think Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams, in all likelihood, should get better in year two. And I do think there's still a lot more progression for Caleb Williams. I think for all the heroics, the late game heroics that he was able to provide, which I think is a great thing. And, you know, that above all else is why you feel good if you're a Bears fan, that he can, you know, maybe be one of these, you know, top five quarterbacks in the league in the future here, because he's capable of those moments. There's still some, you know, early in the game or the first half, if he's on time, in rhythm with Ben Johnson's timing offense, you know, I think the team can be better and more efficient offensively, and that will actually serve them well and maybe kind of neutralize if they come back defensively in terms of those takeaways. maybe offensively they can be better and more productive. And so it might end up being a wash where they can still win the NFC North next season, despite not having as many takeaways as they had last year.
Did you win in fantasy this year?
Let's see. So I had a fantastic run. I'm not going to lie. I actually, for the first time after I've been playing, so I began in 1991. So when I was 10 years old, so what's that? That's basically my 34th year, 35th year playing fantasy football this year.
Yeah.
For the first time ever, I actually finished regular season undefeated, went to the championship game, Will, undefeated, and then ended up losing by a half a point.
Oh, my God.
Yes, yes. And I knew it was coming. Brutal. It was the evening when Puka Nacua and the Rams beat the Falcons on Monday Night Football. Puka Nacua's touchdown at the end of the game ended up being the backbreaker for me because it's a PPR scoring. So he got the reception. Yeah. I think it was an 11-yard touchdown. And so that was the difference between me finally having an undefeated season. It's a pretty brutal loss, not going to lie. But all in all, I actually ended up in the four of the five leagues that I'm in. I ended up winning the regular season title. So felt really good about that. But I did not win the title in any of them. So that's just when you get to the playoffs in fantasy football, it really is just there's a lot of randomness that comes into play. You just got to cross your fingers and hope you get lucky.
I went 7-7, just missed the playoffs to a tiebreaker. I was the hottest team at the end of the year. It's too late. I was running at Igbuka. Justin Pottinger, he kept telling me, go, keep Igbuka. And I was like, all right. I was getting at the end of the year, though. I was like, I don't know, man. He's not giving it to me anymore. And anyway, but thanks again for giving me some time. I had a lot of fun, you know, catching up yearly Super Bowl chat. So looking forward to see how it plays out on Sunday.
Yeah, no doubt about it. As always, my pleasure, Will. Enjoyed it. And enjoy Super Bowl 60. It should be fun. Either way, Sam Darnold will be the biggest winner or loser, depending on how this plays out, because that's just the media landscape that we live in these days. And, you know, if Drake May wins his first Super Bowl in year two, get ready, because, boy, oh, boy, that's going to be something that we're not going to hear the end of in the conversations and comparisons to Tom Brady are only going to grow larger. So it'll be crazy either way. Whatever ends up happening, there'll be a lot of fascinating storylines to watch play out. So can't wait. Thanks, Will.